addiction to prescription painkillers, and who is really to blame. There are concerns in this country about the increasing number of Australians hooked on prescription medication, primarily opioids like oxycodone and fentanyl. The drug oxycodone is now the seventh leading drug prescribed in general practice in Australia. The number of opioid prescriptions subsidised by the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme increased from 2.4 million in 1992 to 7 million in 2007. Between 1997 and 2012, oxycodone and fentanyl supply increased 22-fold and 46-fold, respectively. While we have problems in this area, the US is the world's biggest consumer of opioids, with more than 200 million prescriptions written each year. There are also more than 100 million overdoses each year. So, are all opioid addicts and misusers the victims of doctors who hand out such drugs like candy? Not according to our next guest, who says patients, not doctors, are responsible for the opioid epidemic in the United States. Dr. Joel Zinberg is Associate Clinical Professor of Surgery at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City and a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He joins us from the United States. Dr. Zinberg, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you.
Well, people do tend to go to the doctor and say, I've got pain, chronic pain, and they want something for it, don't they?
They do, indeed. And physicians have been encouraged for the last few decades to prescribe it. In fact, we've been chronically criticized for undertreating pain, and patients have been encouraged to report any pain they have and to seek the treatment for pain. And unfortunately, the result is we now have an opioid abuse epidemic with about 2 million Americans abusing or dependent on prescription opioids and overdoses tripling since 2000, with about 20,000 people dying a year. So the FDA in this country has an advisory panel proposing mandatory training and education programs for doctors. But I have written that what's really needed are education and other programs directed at the patients who knowingly or unwittingly divert opioids from legitimate use. And I think those folks are really the ones responsible for the epidemic.
So you think doctors are now treating pain correctly. What's happening, however, is people who are getting the drugs are not taking them, diverting them off to friends or whatever. And that's how the misuse is developing, not actually because someone's getting too much from one doctor.
I think it's a combination of factors. But what's happened is that physicians who were used to using opioids for acute pain and for treating cancer patients with pain and end-of-life pain were criticized that they weren't prescribing enough. And now, as a result, opioids are used for all sorts of non-cancer pains, for all sorts of chronic pains, for which there is really no evidence that they're effective in those settings. Mm. So the problem has really become that physicians in most cases, I'm not saying all, but in most cases, have been over-encouraged to prescribe, but it's really the abuse has resulted because opioid abusers are obtaining drugs from friends and relatives who got them legitimately from physicians. And the education and resources should be directed towards those patients so that they can secure or discard their drugs before they're given to or stolen by their friends and family.
Look, this rings true. I had orthopedic surgery and was given a whole range of this stuff and I couldn't wait to get off it. But it's true. I've got a packet of it in the drawer at home and I don't know what I'd do if someone said, oh, have you got some of that? Can I have it? I might give it to them. I don't know. Now, you've got some figures, haven't you, on the increase in opioid prescriptions from the early 90s to 2013?
Right. Well, in the United States, they've really gone wild in terms. And it's, by the way, it's not just the United States. There's been a tremendous increase in Western Europe. There's been a tremendous increase, I think, in Australia and New Zealand. There's really been an increase sort of around the world, except for a few areas. But the number of prescriptions have gone really sky high. And unfortunately, when you have that much medication floating about, as you described, and you know, you have it in a drawer, it becomes susceptible to abuse. If someone in your family, an adolescent, found that, they might start abusing it. Or if, as you suggested, a friend asked you for it, they might start diverting it and abusing it.
Yeah. Well, to jump from 76 million in 1991 to 207 million prescriptions in 2013, and that's nearly three times. That's a phenomenal increase, three times. Just a sudden jump, because physicians now want to treat pain and have been encouraged to treat pain. And you say overdoses have tripled since the year 2000. Yes. Well, it's only 2016, and they've tripled.
That's correct. They've tripled from the year 2000 to the present. So, you know, it's not mere. So that's partly a result, I think, of the physicians being encouraged to prescribe and prescribe liberally. It's also, and that's sort of in official medicine. They've had a move to treat pain as the fifth vital sign.
Now, what does that mean? Pain as the fifth vital sign. I mean, if I keel over and faint, someone can take my blood pressure, they can, you know, get my heartbeat, a whole range of things they can test objectively. But whether I'm feeling pain or not seems to be a subjective thing.
It is indeed. So the as you described, there are four objective signs that physicians will measure: the temperature, your pulse rate, your respiration rate, and those are things that are objective. But now you've been told that you have to add this thing, which is completely subjective, and it's subjective on the part of the patient. And they've been given these fancy-looking 0 to 10 scales and faces that go from frowning to excited and happy. But the fact of the matter is it's subjective. So patients have, I think, as a side effect, they've sort of become disinhibited, and they've been encouraged to report any and all pain rather than to consider that perhaps the pain is transitory, or perhaps the pain is bearable, perhaps it can be treated with something less than an opioid. And as a result, this combination of physicians being pushed on the one end and patients being pushed on the other, you have the overprescription of opioids.
Now, you mentioned less easily abused pain medicines that have abuse deterrent formulations. What's that all about? I haven't heard of that.
Well, for example, a notorious drug in this country is called OxyContin. I don't know how available that was in Australia, but for a very short time, for a number of years, not a short time, OxyContin, which is a long-acting form of oxycodone, an opioid, was being abused because abusers figured out very quickly that they could grind the drug up and then either snort it or inject it. And they got an immediate high because it had a very high dose of the narcotic. Then the company, after many years of pressure, began to put the oxycodone in a much less easily abused form. So the tablet couldn't be crushed as easily, it couldn't be snorted. So the abuse of OxyContin went down. And many drugs can be put in forms that they have some sort of antagonist attached to them, or they're compounded with another drug which an abuser wouldn't want, like acetaminophen or aspirin. And those are ways that you can try to limit the abuse potential of some of these drugs.
Yeah, you mentioned there's a problem universally. It certainly is in Australia. Oxycodone and fentanyl supply increased in Australia 22-fold. And 46-fold, respectively, between 97 and 2012. They're very dramatic increases, very dramatic, and equally the number of prescriptions, not quite three times, but nearly three times over a very similar period to the one we were talking about in the United States. So this is, in fact, an international problem.
It is indeed, but regarding the medications that have these abuse deterrent formulations, the problem that we have, at least in the United States, is that 60% of branded opioids come in these abuse deterrent formulations, while only 2% of the generic products do. And since there's a great push to save money and to prescribe the cheapest possible medication, people are being pushed into generic non-opioids, which don't have these abuse deterrent formulations, and are obviously now more easily abused than the branded opioids that do come in the abuse deterrent formulations. So I think what's necessary is to not be so parsimonious, to be willing to spring for these branded opioids if they can cut back on this problem, and also to make it easier to get generic opioids with the abuse deterrent formulations available. So I think that in the United States, that's something the FDA can be involved in, and obviously in Australia would be your drug approval authorities.
Well, Dr. Zinberg, thanks for joining us. It is a problem all around the world, and I certainly know it is in Australia, and I'm going to go home and flush mine down the loo.
Okay, or at least turn them back into the pharmacy if they'll accept them.
Well, I could do that, yeah. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Next on Counterpoint here on RN, the country without a government, where the economy is booming.